Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number, and Joe at RTE.ie, the simplest email from the in the world, from Bring It On Your Holidays. We'll be here, 51551 and Joe at RTE.ie. Now, yesterday we spoke to Oliver Despard about his son Oscar, and Oscar is representing and the captain indeed of Cambridge University in University Challenge final next Monday night. And he mentioned during the conversation that there was a book that he gave his son at an early age called The Numbers Devil, which accentuated Oscar's interest in maths. Now, David Carr, that was Willie Despard that was talking to us yesterday from Bretzel Bakery about Oscar. David Carr. David, good afternoon.
Hey, how's it going? Good. Thanks very much for having me on.
Yeah, fair play to you. Were you were interested in maths when from an early age?
Yeah. No, I was a big maths fan, all right. Would have loved all the games in the long car journeys we used to play, and even all the maths time in school would have been my favourite time always, yeah.
Brilliant. Now, you're from Ashbourne, or you were in Gael School, Ashbourne. Now, the first fascinating thing, David, is that your two aunties were in the World Drafts finals together.
Yeah. So,
first of all, if you can give us their names, it would help. That would be great.
Yeah, it's Patricia and Karina Breen.
Patricia and Karina, okay.
So my granddad, Pat Breen from Carlow, would have taught his seven daughters all about drafts. And now his seven daughters have been training all Pop's grandchildren, so me included. And we try to keep the All-Ireland draft titles in one of our seven homes, you know.
And how successful has that been, David?
Yeah, I think I have maybe two. I think my brother has four. But then my cousins are in Cork and Carlow and Duleek. We're spaced around the country, but many thanks to all my mum and all the aunties who've been training us all our life.
Patricia and Green, and there is an All Ireland Drafts competition, is there? Obviously.
We were always in the junior. None of us have braved the full weekend yet, but we must put it on our bucket list and get around to it.
Yeah, but your two aunties, Patricia and Karina, I hope they're still with us. Are they still with us?
Yeah, great. They're so probably listening now.
Big shout out to Patricia and Karina. But you say they were in the World Drafts finals together.
Yeah, in America they probably call it checkers. You know, yeah, chess okay. draft. Yeah.
And how did they get on?
Great. they probably roomed together, you know. So that's been a big part of our lives, drafts and maths and sport.
And who plays drafts, David, anymore? It's a great... You know the way people say, oh, it's chess and all the Netflix series, series about chess and all half of the spy movies about chess masters. But you never hear, drafts isn't exactly sexy, is it? Speak freely, Dave.
I think the chess is the sexy one, all right. We love drafts. It's super simple. And yet it's so hard to win, you know. So drafts is our favourite, but we all play chess too.
Okay. Yeah. Now let's stick. I'm just wondering: I presume there are drafts clubs. I presume there are drafts pubs. I know it starts now in every pub, it seems, in Ireland. But I presume there's drafts clubs and pubs still going. Okay. So you were brilliant at drafts from an early age, but you were you were born into a very competitive family.
When it came
to checkers. Okay. Second level, how'd you get on the second level?
Yeah, great. In terms of academics, would have been, you know, fine. I would have got the all A's and the 65 And then would have played a lot of sport, I guess, through secondary school.
Good
as
lad.
Well, yeah.
Good lad. And then, by the way, was your maths acuity, was it spotted in primary school, David?
Yeah, it probably was, yeah. We probably used to play a head-to-head game where you'd go around the room and, you know, race in pairs, and probably would have always been the favourite to win every week, you know?
So that was the earlier...
I had a great maths teacher all through.
Brilliant.
Maths and physics teachers, Miss Morrissey and Mr Sheeran from Ashburn Community School.
They were
really, really good, you know, always pushing me to the max.
So this speed dating or speed drafts, and that happened once a week?
Yeah, in primary school. That was third class in primary school. Munter Nolig of Gaelscoin the Killer would have pinned us 1v1s around the room, you know. And
So you went around. Are you all... Give me the picture.
You'd stand next to someone, and the teacher would ask a question, and whoever answers it first stays standing, and the other person sits down.
Okay.
So that's kind of inspiration to where it got me today. But
that's a quiz. Like, it's a quiz.
Yeah, just times tables, really. It was just the time we were learning our times tables, really.
Oh, it was always maths questions. Brilliant.
Yeah, just maths questions, yeah.
And were you often last man standing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we've introduced a rule that the winner couldn't play then the next week. So I only got to play and win every second week then, you know?
Okay. And how did your classmates, how did they take to you?
Great. I was surrounded by super smart classmates, which made me probably push me to go further, you know? Killian and JP and Alana. The load of really smart people in my class. All right, yeah.
Okay, third level, where did we go? Were you lucky enough to get to third level?
Went to DCU and studied actuary maths.
Oh, great. Actuarial maths.
Yes.
Brilliant. And tell our listeners, a lot of them would know, what does an actuary do?
Yeah, so I guess you're probably known as an expert of probability and risk assessment and that side of maths. And then, sadly, like to put it dull, you probably are calculating the likelihood of, you know, people dying, really. You know, you're working in an insurance company. Mostly. I mean, some people are doing trading or investments and stuff. But, yeah, a lot of it is just calculating over 30 years the different probabilities and stuff, yeah.
And when you, obviously you did well. And when you were looking at the course to do in DCU, did you say, I want to do the hardest maths course challenge?
Yeah, probably the reason.
Okay, I thought, were you snapped up or were you offered? You know, in Cambridge, in Cambridge and Oxford, when you graduate in history or politics, you're called in and there's a mystery man invariably sitting in the corner and you discover he or she is from MI5 and you're being offered a place in MI. I'm thinking of Philby and Borges. Were you called in at the end when your maths were so brilliant and did it say, David, Paddy Power would love to have you? Or Boyle Sports would love to have you.
Not just yet.
Okay. But I presume there are actuaries in and guys and women and who are brilliant at maths in bookies.
No, definitely. There's a lad from my hometown who'd be big into all that sort of sports betting and trading. He was the top student of UCD actuary course, Angus Mulville. So he would have been going along that path. I chose to go to America actually for a different path, but
okay.
It's
so
really interesting.
You're in America now, and this is what has you in the news, so to speak. You've invented an app, and it's a maths app. Okay, talk us through it. Where did the idea come from? Who was your collaborator?
Yeah, so didn't do it alone. Worked alongside Chris Fakimi from California. So the two of us. So I guess it started in maybe August. I won funding from the university. Would have pitched my idea and wireframes, I guess, to the computer science graduate school at Notre Dame and just said, hey, I'm looking for a computer scientist to work with on this idea for the year. And a few of them showed interest, and I thought Chris was, you know, the best man for it. Chris So the real interest in, you know, maths, entrepreneurship, daily games. Mm-hmm. He's seriously talented at what he does. So we partnered up probably September time. Okay. And yeah, kind of took it from there.
And but where did the idea of going along that road of a maths app, a maths gaming, games, did that come from?
Yeah, like I guess having tutored maths, that was my part-time gig through college. And so I guess I understood, like, so many people are scared of maths or low of confidence or just, you know, find it stressful. So trying to scale the impact I was having, you know, I was teaching people in small groups or in classrooms, but you're limited to the size of the class. So, I wanted to take that online and affect more people, you know, and help more people really. Yeah.
Yeah, and like, I don't know whether that book I mentioned earlier, the Numbers Devil, isn't that what it's called? Was that your generation? Do you remember that book now?
There's a book I like, it's called Humble Pie.
Humble Pie, brilliant. As in pie?
Yeah, P-I.
Okay, so the app is now developed. It's called, it's called Pi, P-I, obviously, squared.
Yes, Pi squared. Spell out squared, so it's PI-SQUARED.
And you go onto your app store, as I did this morning, and you get it, and you can get it very quickly, and it's free. And there's now, I'm a daily Wordle addict. I suspect this might replace it. Is there a Wordle antecedent there?
Yeah, no, hugely inspired from Wordle and Duolingo. Really, saw the impact they were having on people's ability to spell five-letter words and said, hey, why don't we take this to maths and, you know, keep it super simple but make people do more maths in their days than they're already doing and help build their attitude towards maths to make it more fun and competitive and enjoyable.
And Wordle wasn't apparently invented by a fellow called Josh Wardle.
Yeah, James Wardle, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Have you met him?
No. Okay. I've done extensive research on his story, all right, though. I think he made it for his wife, all right.
Originally. Yeah, during COVID? Was it during COVID?
Yeah.
And it can be a tough game, but it's the simplest idea, but it's such a brilliant idea that he was bought by, I think, the New York Times bought it, didn't they?
Yeah,
and they paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And your app, Pi Squared, is free.
It's free, yeah. I suppose that's probably the long-term dream, all right. You know, keep building a product that people love and keep growing our user base. And then I suppose one day you got to take the leap and probably join forces with one of the big dogs to extend that impact you kind of have on people, you know, to get it out there to more people. Because ultimately the goal is to help millions of people, you know. So if that's going to help along the way, that makes most sense.
Because maths is the universal language. Maths is every single day and every single way and every single moment.
Maths
and numbers are being interpreting and moving and progressing. Our lives. That's the incredible. Do you want to be you be evangelical, David? I won't say in five letters in Wordle, but be evangelical in 12 words or less, or fewer. Sorry, 12 words or fewer. Why maths is so important in the world we live in?
Great question to ask. 12 words or fewer.
Yeah, well, you know,
I would say in the age of AI, is my, you know, first five. Maths plays a part in every single day activities.
Okay.
If that's it in short.
And maths is the universal language.
Yeah.
Which is.
From someone who was studying it to someone who's just working at a cashier, you know, dealing out change.
Everything.
It's great understanding, even for people to understand how things like ChatGPT and that work, you know, it's all probability based.
And what about, you know, pupils get a fright when they see algebra.
Yeah, they do. So I guess our daily challenges are built for, you know, a family to sit around the table after dinner. You know, you could have a 10-year-old competing against a 40-year-old, against a 70-year-old. And, you know, the questions are probably just as hard for everyone. It's the sort of times table you learn in primary school, and you could use your calculator, but it's built to kind of keep brain sharp, build attitude towards math, make it more of a positive, kind of enjoyable experience rather than a stressful one. And that kind of is what hooks people in every day. Simple math questions. And then you have, obviously, the chance to go on further and do more maths then when you're in the app.
So many people have downloaded the app?
So we launched on January the 29th. So about 3 months ago now. And we probably have about 3,400 downloads at this point.
Okay.
With about 400 playing every day.
Right, okay. And is there anything comparable in the App Store, if you follow me?
Yeah, great question. I mean, Duolingo released a maths department there. So,
oh, did they? Yeah, okay.
I guess how we see ourselves being different to, you know, Duolingo, for example, is we added the time pressure component. So it's all a race.
The ticking clock, yeah.
As well as that, we have a public leaderboard, so we're really targeting that sort of competitive person and people who love a competition and ranking against one another. So, you know, today you might be first on the leaderboard, tomorrow you might be last, but people enjoy, you know, playing for the minute a day and then comparing with their friends or family or seeing where everyone else is, you know.
And it's very accessible. As you say, there is a, and a lot of people love Duolingo, and Duolingo has this ability to contact you 3 days after your last class to say, I hope you're well and nothing has happened to you.
They're good, yeah.
They're brilliant. How far advanced are you with this app, David?
We've notifications, all right, but we probably haven't been as extreme. they're very good at what they do.
So who funded this? Who gave you the few bob to get going?
Yeah, I guess today we've just earned $13,000 of funding, it's very much a lean team, just a team of two, myself and Chris, up until now, really. And you know, there's not too much expenses really associated with building an app other than just your time, and we live for this, so it, you know.
I remember back in the day on Liveline, that could be 25 years ago now, when we were, every now and again we used to do quizzes and maths. And we used to call on a great prof down in UCC, Des McHale. And Des would come on with a kind of a maths puzzle. You know, these maths conundrums. I don't know whether you do them or not. Well, what's next for you, David? We're going to try and get you more subscribers because I think it's great and it's free. So
yeah,
what's
thanks, Millen.
Especially in your home country of Ireland. But what's next for you, do you hope? Have you other ideas?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully keep growing this, you know, until we're at 3,500 now. I mean, the goal by the end of the year, I think I put out publicly, was we had 100,000 users would be great, you know. So really, really not stopping yet, you know. Yeah. It's a great app and it's going well, but we're not fully there yet.
No,
we're
not at all. No, it's early days. Think of the Collison brothers.
I guess I built a great relationship with Chris from California now as well. You know, you never know in the future. You know, we built up a great partnership and we've proven. So if another idea came across our desk in the future, you know, we'd probably be happy to partner up.
When you're out with your mates, do they say to you, go on, David, ask us a trick maths question?
Let me see. I could ask you one. I guess, how many nines are there between 1 and 100?
Many nines between 1 and 100? Well, there's 99, that'd be 2. And would it be 10?
So in the 90s, you have 99.
91, 92, 93, 94. Brilliant. That's me failed. I got an A in pass maths in my leaving. And I think the reason was they didn't do well. I think I was trying to do honours maths, but I couldn't count the number of times I failed, as the fella said. Honours maths, I end up doing pass maths, but I got an A, whatever that means. It doesn't mean much, actually, at the end of the day. The name of the app is Pi Squared. And by the way, did you have, I presume all of this legally, David, is copyrighted and patented in Because someone will rob your idea.
It's funny enough, in technology and that, the idea isn't as important. You know, with AI, you know, most people can build anything right now. I think the real value, say, for someone like New York Times to buy out Wordle, it's the user base. You know, the people playing it every day. That's what, you know, so it's building the relationship with the users, trying to always interview on users every week. And trying to understand, hey, what should we build next? Like, what's missing? What's the next thing you want to see? So, I think that's been most important to us. It's like, hey, you know, anyone can build anything and compete with us, but we're trying to work with our people and, you know, make it the best experience possible for them. And that's really been what's valuable, yeah.
And you go back to your granddad earlier. Was it Pat Sherry? So what did you call your granddad?
Yeah, Pat Breen.
Pat Breen, okay. Yeah. Now, what did Pat do in real life apart from play drafts?
Yeah, he was actually a farmer, yeah.
Good man.
Farmer in Carlow.
And was he into maths or was he...
Yeah, he was very, very intelligent, all right, yeah. No, yeah. Seriously intelligent, and I think would have left all his knowledge with all his family, yeah. And always teaching all of us, yeah. He's very good.
And the Guinness Book of Records?
In terms of...
You're... The youngest winner, thanks to the listener here, the youngest winner of a world title is Patricia Guinness Book Record. Is from 19, is Patricia Breen of Carlow.
Oh, wow, yes, yeah.
Who won
the
women's drafts. I'm glad I could get one up on you at least after you humiliating me with your 99999 question.
I think the answer to that was
who won the women's world drafts championship at Western Supermare. Somerset on the 14th, on the 1st of April 1993, she was aged 16.
Wow.
Guinness Book of Records. So, Manny, give me the total then of the number of nines between 1 and 100.
So, I think it's 20 if I have it right here, but you know, you have 9 and 19 and 29, and you work up in all the nines. In all the tens, and then you have another 10 in the 90s.
Okay.
So nine,
now.
And then there's 2 on the 99.
Now, David, on yesterday's programme, we were talking about quizzes and Oscar, who's from Dublin, and he's captain of the Cambridge University Challenge team. And then we start talking about quizzes and ideas for quizzes. And I don't know whether you know it or not, but Ireland at the minute, between Rob Lowe and Jamie Foxx, they're making all these quiz shows here in Ireland for American consumption. And
wow.
I was just, is there a quiz in there somewhere? Can we monetize this even more? Me, you.
Yeah.
I'm saying, David, me, you, and what's your collaborator's name in California?
Chris.
Me, you, and Chris. Can we monetize? Is there a quiz in this, a television quiz?
I think the first way we could monetize, people are so competitive. People are looking to pay to play in tournaments, you know, where there was a prize money for the winner each day. So that could be the first one. You could start on the app, but definitely, you know, I love all them game shows like The Chase and everything, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That'd
be great.
Okay. It's P-I.
P-I and then squared. S-Q-U-A-R-E-D.
Yeah, just put that in. Just put it in your app store. It'll come up. You'll get a few variations maybe, but you can see the logo is the pie. Logo, obviously, the pie marker signifier, two eyes, as in Specsavers, and the number 2, so you can recognise it instantly. And it's very colourful, and it's very
yellow background and a blue pie. Yeah.
Okay. So, you've no idea. By the way, are you still studying?
So I'm just actually back in Ireland now for the week.
Oh, good
just
lad.
Visit home, and then I'm graduating next week from Notre Dame. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Flying back now. Great. Sadly, flying back on Saturday, right before the Meath Loud game, you know.
Okay. What's the probability there?
I'm up for Meath anyway.
Okay, I'm trying to find out who the Irish drafts champion is at the minute. Now, as I see, one of your family names came up, but you reckon if we went through the pantheon, so to speak, of Irish drafts champions at various ages, the name Breen, or variations of it, going back to your grandfather, Pat Breen, would feature a lot.
Yeah, yeah, they would, and a lot, because there are seven girls in that house, so a lot of our surnames might have changed now, you know, between Harrington and Leonard and Carr.
Yeah, of course.
You'll find us, yeah, in all the under community games from under 8s up to under 16s.
And David,
all that.
Is your granddad still alive?
Yeah, brilliant. I actually just visited him there on Monday.
Why can't we talk to him?
I know, it would have been much more exciting.
We have to ask the man, of course. But just that's incredible. What he's created. This incredible. Yeah. By the way, one tip for playing drafts, please, David. Give me one tip. Yeah.
I would say.
Or two tips or three tips.
Don't strip your back line too early. You know, keep your pieces on the back line.
Keep them tight.
I would say. Control the centre in diamonds. And then I would say set up mouse traps in the end game. So a mouse trap is when you give one piece for free, but you take two back.
Oh, I love it. But the great thing about drafts is you can sit down, a 6-year-old can sit down with an 8-year-old, and the 8-year-old you think you're good at maths, at drafts, mm-hmm. but the 8-year-old could beat you.
Mm-hmm. It's just like table tennis, huh? Yeah. It's fit for anyone, yeah.
It's great. So, and by the way, it's a cheap sport and no one can get injured and you can wear what you want. You don't have to wear a skirt or you don't have to wear a pair of shorts. You can wear whatever you want, David. And you can play it. You can play it anywhere. A caller contacted us, he's just downloaded. He can't talk to us as he's walking off a cliff. No, sorry, he's walking along a cliff. Don't play it. Stop, move inwards. He's downloaded it on a cliff. Because when I came across it this morning when I was told about it, it is addictive.
Yeah. I mean, the beauty of it is the daily games are once a day. So that's kind of the hook. You're like, hey, you know, keeping them till tomorrow, you know?
And Sudoku. Are you good at that?
I'd be a big game player of all these sort of games.
Sudoku has baffled me, and really has for some reason. And I love crosswords, and I love Wordle, and I love all that you know, the where you're given two letters in a grid, and you've got to work out what all the words are. I love.
Yeah.
There's another great game. Online, which I think is called, anyway, it'll come up to me in a sec, where you're given two or three letters. It's basically the online version of what I've just been talking about. And you set out to fill in all the words, and it can be great, great fun, especially if you're sitting there. I think it's called Checkout. I'll get the number, I'll get the proper name for people. Anyway, David, enjoy the rest of your stay. Stay on the line. I think it's fascinating. Fair play. Did you ever do Young Scientists or anything like that?
I would have done the Olympiads. And not necessarily. I was always really sporty.
Okay, the maths Olympiad. Okay.
Yeah, I was always super sporty. So probably probably try to balance a bit of sport in school that I probably never gave 100% to either. Probably always 95% to both.
Good man. By the way, the game I'm thinking about is called Code Word. It's brilliant. Where you're given two or three letters in a crossword grid, basically, and you've got to, and there's numbers in each grid, and you've got to try and find the letters. I find that interesting as well. Now, in actuarial life, David, finally. Because I'm sounding like a nerd at this stage, but I know nothing nerd. You're a know everything and know a lot nerd. Is there any such thing as an actuarial 100%? Do you follow me?
Like being perfect at actuary?
No. Is there anything where you can actually say, I am 100% sure that this probability is?
Good question. I guess. I mean, I hope I'm 100% certain Mead will be loud now on Sunday, but
okay.
I think it depends who you're talking to. I'm very risk averse, not certain, you know.
okay Great talking to you, David. You're a tonic, and great honour now to your granddad. Great honour, and your grandparents, I'm sure, for what he's doing. And we try and find draft champions around the country. The app is called Pi Squared, SQUARED, spelt out. The logo is a lovely, colourful logo. It's on. It'll come up on my screen now in a sec when I go back to look at when I download it. It's a yellow background, and it has the blue pie logo with the two eyes and eyes as in Specsavers in the middle. Very, very easy. Keep the faith, David.
Yes, thanks a million. I really appreciate it. Thank
you. Anytime. Up, who do we say for Sunday? Up.
Up the Royals.
Yeah, but they took Dublin out. You can feck. No. You took Dublin out.
Well, I'm here, Joe. I must quickly say hello to my other three grandparents. They're all still with me, you know.
Great. Come on, quickly. Brilliant. Where are they based? What are their names?
So there's Dennis, Antoinette and Kathleen.
Okay.
Because Pat was getting all the attention.
I know. Okay. Dennis, Antoinette and Kathleen, you should be, and Pat, very, very proud of your grandson, and stick close to him because he could be in the money in a year or two, hopefully.
It's a free app.
I know it is. Okay, David Carr from Ashbourne and County Mead, inventor with Chris, inventor of the Pi Squared app, which is taking the world by storm. Do you hear me? Taking it by storm. Get it now. Download it. Have a bit of fun. And it's a learning exercise as well. And all the family can play it. David Carr, go to Mila Market. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Not many people know that Weight Watchers has filed for bankruptcy. It's gone. Slimmed down. Disappeared. Now, the Antoinette Findlay. Antoinette, good afternoon.
Hey Joe, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I'm not David's other granny.
Were you in Weight Watchers?
I was. I was in Weight Watchers for a good few years, but I remember back in 22.
Yeah.
I was talking to a researcher earlier on, and we went one Tuesday morning down to the usual class, and The leader said, look, Weight Watchers are leaving Ireland. They'd only told them the previous Friday that they were leaving Ireland. They were going online, you know. And I remember at the time getting in touch with you and saying, like, all their meetings. Their meetings was what made it work for me.
Getting there
every week, sitting in the room, chatting, talking about different things. And that really worked for me. So I was kind of gobsmacked that they... They just pulled out of Ireland, but was all online, and it just wasn't the same after that. Then, you know,
it wasn't that okay. What was the attraction then of Weight? Because it was extraordinarily popular. What was the attraction of it? Was it
I think it was just the buzz of going every week and finding out if you're up or you're down, like standing on the scale, having a good week, then going to the chipper on the way home.
And what were those meetings like? Would you be embarrassed, mortified, or over the moon? Be times.
All three, times. You know, like you might go one week and you might have been really good, and then you're up by a pound or 2 pounds, and you're sitting there, scarlet. Like, but nobody knows. It's all private. Like, you know, it's not broadcast.
I thought your weight would be called out in front of everybody.
No, if you did well, it was broadcast to the room.
Okay.
But if you didn't do well, they wouldn't home in on you, like, you know, wouldn't be like that. And
there'd be people would share stories about what they found difficult, what they found useful, ideas they came across.
Yeah, ideas, what they might have found in the shop, how many points it might be that you wouldn't have known about it, and you might go out and get that. And then you might have if you lost 7 pounds, you got this little silver sticker, a little silver 7 sticker. And you were jumping out over the moon, and then if you lost a stone, you were given a little glass stone, you know. So that was kind of more for your mental... to keep you on track. You'd look at this stone and you'd see how far you'd come, you know.
And did you pay? Did you have to pay?
Yeah, you paid, it was €10 a week, but if you got to your goal, which was your own goal, if you know, they wouldn't tell you what you needed to get to. They'd ask you what you'd be comfortable with. If you got to that, then you were free. You were a free member. You were called a gold member.
Wasn't Oprah Winfrey involved at one stage?
Yes, she was, but I only was speaking to your researcher earlier on, and she said she came off the board of directors in 2018, I think she said, or 2020. So I couldn't believe them when I heard that they were filing for bankruptcy, because they were, to me, they were, well, I was a successful member on it, Joe, but I mean, the menopause fairy put paid to that.
Okay.
I wouldn't be as successful as I was then.
Yeah, okay, I understand.
Yeah.
By the way, Weight Watchers was founded 61 years ago this week, in May 1963, in Queens, in New York.
Yeah, yeah.
And the whole idea was for people to support each other.
That was really it. That's how it really started, that women got together every week. In somebody's house, by the way. It might be somebody's...
Yeah,
because I remember the story about Weight Watching, I think, watching a documentary about it, and it was just a group of women, and we'll meet, we'll have a chat about how we did, and then it'd be a different house the next week. But it was that support group that made Weight Watchers. So I was really surprised when they pulled the plug in 2022 and went online. I couldn't believe that.
And when you say online, Antoinette, are they Zoom calls or... Like like AA and various other mindfulness groups are online, but you're all up on the screen, and you are talking to, obviously there's lots of in-person AA meetings.
See, I don't know, because I never went that far with them. I tried to sign up, and you got a newsletter, and it was something. It was something you just did on your own. You were never going to have the same support as you had at a. Online, as you would at a group meeting.
I know, I understand that. I totally understand it. Even the chats you'd have at the end of it or beforehand.
Absolutely,
or
you make friends.
Of course.
Yeah.
Jacqueline, stay there, Antoinette. Yeah. Jacqueline, you have a question. I don't know if I can answer it or not, but go ahead, Jacqueline.
Have I a question? No, I was just thinking, researching me, just saying what Weight Watchers was like for us.
Okay, but you're saying does anyone know why Weight Watchers pulled out of Ireland?
No.
Nobody knows.
And that's true. Nobody seems to know, even the leaders or nothing. They were just all just told that's it, over.
That's exactly it, yeah. Our leader just told us on a Tuesday. She just said, I'm sorry to tell you, but they just told, and they only were told themselves the previous Friday. Which
they only told the leaders. Yeah, that was terrible. Like they lost their jobs too. Like,
oh, did they? Yeah. Oh God, that's difficult, isn't it? And by the way, did you pay money? Is there money owed? Did you pay money up front?
Well, I didn't.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if anybody did. But.
Well, I presume the bit I was reading about it in the States is that they're saying the likes of Ozempic and all these new fatty chemical side effecty, everything side effects, all the and expensive drugs and what to call them, the skinny jabs or whatever, that they're making a difference.
Well, I don't know how they weren't around to 2022, were they? So they didn't affect Ireland.
No, they weren't around then. No, no.
You know,
so you're saying they're gone. They're gone longer.
Yeah,
they're
gone longer than skinny jabs, right? Like.
Okay. And Jacqueline and Antoinette, maybe you, Antoinette, first. Could you set up a Weight Watchers group yourselves? Do you need an organisation? Could you do it through Facebook or?
Well, the girl that ran our Weight Watchers, she set up a group after that, and as far as I know, she's still in the same place as she was with a group of people.
Okay.
Well, I know she was looking at it thinking maybe she wasn't doing so well, but she kept at it anyway. And well, I haven't been, obviously, because like it was just a lot of different things that went down that year, and I just never got going back. But as far as I know, yes, she does a group, but she obviously it's not Weight Watchers, but you know, but she does have the motivation to give you the motivation, do you know what I mean, to carry on. And they were a lovely group of women that were in that class, but I haven't been myself, so but I'm sure, yeah, you could. I'm sure it's quite easily done.
And I presume that was part of the success of it, was that motivation.
Yeah.
Okay. No doubt it. Well, hopefully it'll be replaced by, because it was non-invasive. You didn't take medication. Sure, you didn't, Antonetta. You didn't have to go on these concocted drinks or whatever that taste like cardboard.
No. You had a list of foods. You had a list of foods, every food under the sun, and a weight and like a 30 grams would be 1 point or 2 points, and then you were allowed, say, for your body, your size, your height, we say 20 points a day, and so you do that, and then you had an extra 23 for the week to spoil yourself, if you know what I mean. But you'd be writing down everything, and you know that was the key, that you wrote down everything and you kept yourself on track, and then you knew by that Tuesday, you know, that you had a good week, and you were able to say, yeah, I had a good week, you know. And then, of course, if you didn't have a good week, you'd say, oh, I better not go because I might put up. You know?
Okay. So,
it didn't make any sense for whoever.
But, Jacqueline, if you did have a good week and you had a few extra points, where would you go? Where would you head for your cheat night?
Well, now we'd head for Mellie's Cafe for fish and chips or Southern Red chicken and chips. What's the Diet Coke like?
The Diet Coke would be great. The Diet Coke would be great. Well, by the way, what was a gold member?
A gold member was somebody who reached their target, reached their weight. You know, what they wanted to lose or what they'd set on them, and they were going. Then they got free every week. I became a gold member, and I was, you know, free every week then. Like,
and do we know if Weight Watchers exists in the UK? Is it anywhere at the minute? I know it's gone from Ireland, which is the mystery in one sense. But does it exist?
I don't think it's anymore.
Okay.
Well
done. I know it's. But the thing about Weight Watchers Weight Watchers weren't selling. They weren't selling any. They weren't trying to get you to buy a drink or a jab or whatever. Now, I know certain companies bought, like, there was beans you could buy saying as recommended by Weight Watchers. But still, it never struck me that it was a multi-billion, trillion-dollar business. But anyway, here's to Weight Watchers.
They used to have Weight Watchers frozen meals as well.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't seen them. I haven't looked for them. But they'd have them. And you'd have Weight Watchers cans of beans on the shelf. They were never as nice as the normal ones, but look. I haven't seen any of that. I don't know if their products are even still around.
Yeah. It's gone a few years now. In Ireland. By the way, Jacqueline, if Jacqueline's still there, Antoinette, like, would you sit there looking at each other saying, like, how many points is in a bunch of grapes or how many points is in one Weetabix? That was a key. You had to ask about, you had to find out how many points were. I think Jacqueline's gone. Mary O'Donoghue. Mary, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
You're an ex-Weight Watchers member and coach.
I am indeed. And, yes, I am.
And why did it go?
Well, it was a bit of a shock to, a massive shock to all of us as coaches. I know COVID kicked in and we pivoted during COVID times, and we did do online classes, which were obviously a big train, you know, a big curve for us as leaders to go on and do it. But we had got lots of members, and we were a massive support over COVID times. And then we got an email literally on a Friday evening saying that the company was closing. So as leaders, we were devastated. And our members got the message at the same time as the actual leaders, our coaches got them. So it was a massive shock. Weight Watchers has been a very big part of my life in terms of my own weight loss. I joined in 1998. So I totally understand what the ladies are talking about in terms of support.
But it is. Given that it's gone a few years now at this stage, like, has anything sprung up in its place?
Well, actually, myself and two of my colleagues, Catherine and Nicola, we've set up Turning Point Wellness. And I know other leaders have done different things. And we have, thankfully, we've had members who have been with us as Weight Watcher members who've continued with us, and they've been extremely loyal,
and are you,
which is fantastic.
Are you working off the same template, so to speak?
Okay. Well, what we're doing actually is that we're very much, well, our name, it's been Turning Point Wellness, is, you know, that it's managing life, it's healthy eating, it's just been able to, to weave in and trying to manage your weight, you know, with what goes on. And we all have different things going on in our lives.
Mary, was the other callers on saying it was actually good fun? Was it?
It was great fun. And we have great connection. And, you know, you make great friends, and the people have known like for years, and they come in and they know each other, and they meet up for coffees. And, you know, and I heard you talking about, you know, would you sit and ask about the points in a bunch of grapes? We might have done that years ago, but, we do have, underpinning it all, Joe, is, you know, eating healthily. It's not dieting. We probably, every single one of us probably walked into a room at some time, you know, to lose weight and to diet. But I think as time goes on, you realise, you know, you understand the importance of eating well and, you know, our health and all the things that change as you get that little bit older. Yeah. So we do have the in-person experience coming in, the traditional, you weigh in, we take a seat, we have our chats, we have the motivational talk. And then we do online also, and we do one-to-one. So there's various things, you know, different people want different things. Not everybody wants to step on a scale. Some people just want to learn how to eat healthily. So we offer all of that. So we decided the very day that we were told that we're closing, we just said we weren't going to stop. We were just going to continue.
Well done. And Mary, I know we were told before we shouldn't, and I'm not going to ask people how much weight they lost, because it's a very personal thing. But
extremely personal.
Yeah, it is very personal. Would people, when they sat down, would they compare weight to each other, or it seems to me, regardless of how well you did, so to speak, or how you didn't meet your own target that week, the whole atmosphere was supportive?
100%. And you weren't given a target every week, Joe. You'd weigh in and you know, that's just for your own, just to know where you are. But no, you'd never know other people's weight, or you'd never know. Unless somebody wants to talk, no one would ever say, such a weight. But someone might say, you know, I lost a few pounds this week. To be honest with you, at the moment, we don't at all talk about
it.
You know, it really is support.
We are told and warned about being very conscious of body shaming. Jacqueline, Mary mentioned there the number of calories in a bunch of grapes.
Isn't grapes got me sitting on a Weight Watchers?
Is there calories in grapes?
There is calories in grapes.
That's the way I peel every grape I eat. That makes a difference, doesn't it? Yeah, that makes a difference.
That's the difference.
Okay, well done. You all have such fond memories. And I say it was non-invasive, non-intrusive, and relatively inexpensive. And so well done. And as we say, it's gone, unfortunately. And as we heard there from Mary, the number of groups have tried to keep going in various different forms, and they have kept going. Okay, joe@rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And joe@rt.ie. Des Bourne. Des, good afternoon.
How are you doing?
First of all, Des.
Good afternoon.
13 burglaries in 30 years. Is that a record? My God.
I'm not sure.
Oh, and you say that as we well know from newspaper reports over the last few days, they're now using drones to fly over your property and look into sheds, kitchens, kitchen windows.
Well, as far as I know, they haven't flown over here, but I did hear one a few days ago in the neighbourhood.
And well, given that drones are so ubiquitous now that they and you say if you're lucky enough to live in a detached house in the country, motorise your gates.
Yeah.
Why?
It make it difficult for them to get in and get out quickly.
Okay.
It'll go to an easier target.
Pull the curtains, lights on. By the way, of the 13 times you were burgled, was anyone ever caught?
I think they were once because we got some of the property back.
Okay.
So obviously they would have identified somebody.
And you say even if you hide a safe in the floor, they'll use a metal detector.
That's what the guards told us.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Now, and I know one of the last times we were burgled, they pulled back a mat, obviously, to see if there's something under it.
And have you a neighbourhood watch scheme in your area? Are they still going strong?
Is.
I hope they are.
Yeah,
our neighbourhood WhatsApp
yeah.
group or whatever they call it now.
Mm-hmm.
There is one in your area. Okay. You also want to talk about spring cleaning with a purpose.
Yes.
And you want to go ahead. You want to encourage others to reuse. Give us a few examples.
Well, one example is crutches.
Okay.
Over the years, we've accumulated quite a few crutches.
All right.
And I haven't been able to find anybody who will take them. The Jack and Jill Foundation used to, but just to have them melted down for the scrap metal in them.
We've done an item here in this program, it could be 6 years ago, about an Irish charity that were collecting crutches and we were helping them to bring to the third world. We'll try and find out if they still exist.
Yes, and if you could find out as soon as possible, because I have a skip full, and there are 10 or 12 crutches in it, and I hate to do that.
And hospitals will not take back crutches, sure they won't?
Only one hospital, in my experience, did. The physio took a look at the rubbers on the end and said, yeah, they're fine. But generally, they won't touch them.
But I think if you just Google it there. And when I saw this was coming up, I saw there's a group of women in Louth who were collecting crutches to send to Ukraine. They're called Crutches for Ukraine. Actually, they're based in Cork. So they have a wide, if people Google that, they might be able to find out. There's a few of them there. I don't know the ins and outs of it. It's up to yourself, but there seems to be a few of them there. And what does your bugbear about old phones? When you say old phones, given that phones change every week now, what do you mean by old? What do you mean by old phones?
Well, I have some going back as far as Nokia, which is
old mobile phones. Yeah, okay.
Mobiles, yes. But I would have 6 or 8, maybe 10 iPhones, and I believe they contain valuable metals.
That they do. And you want to know who takes them?
Yes, please.
Okay, and you want... What is it? You're saying charity shops won't take working electrical items?
No.
Why not? No. Why not?
Presumably in case somebody gets...
They can't verify them?
They can't, yeah.
And how do you know that Spain does?
Because I spend a fair bit of time in Spain. And I bring stuff to the charity shop, including electrical.
Okay.
And they say they don't actually sell them, but they have a contact with somebody else who takes them and gives them some money for them.
Now, it'd be great if Spain had electricity every now and again. That would help. scrap metal.
The other issue I have is obsolete laptops and other...
Okay.
Computer equipment. A few years ago, probably pre-COVID, there was a charitable organisation in Chapel Lizard Industrial Estate who took all kinds of stuff, from keyboards to processors to screens, cables, the whole lot. And they cleaned up the processor to US military standards. and gave you a certificate to that effect, patched them up, you know, pirated bits from one to the other. And when they were working, they sent them to schools in Africa. But unfortunately, they're no longer there.
And is this a record? You say you have between 15 and 20 old mobile phones.
Well, maybe not 20, but it's probably 15.
Wow.
That wouldn't be a record.
You know? Okay, people would...
I think then
you have the wires and you have the chargers and all the connections and all the nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, what else have you got in this? I see it here in your list. Manhole covers.
Yeah, but they're just scrap. They're genuinely scrap.
They're not worth a few, Bob, no?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to load those up and take them to
metal
recycling
and
company.
If they've still got a name on them, Tonge and Taggart or whatever used to make them. Old hoops off whiskey barrels.
Yes. There's a fair few of those. Now, I didn't drink the whiskey.
I know, but where are the barrels? Did you roll out the barrel?
No, they disintegrated over the years.
Ah, with the wood, yeah. So, do you know what to do with the hoops?
Well, they're going to the metal recycling place.
High chairs. Do charity shops take high chairs?
No.
And I'd say the reason is?
If a child has an accident, they would be sued.
Yeah. Travel cots. What do people do with old travel cots? Is it the same?
I don't know. We have one and we haven't tested the charity shops yet.
Pots and pans and utensils and...
Yep.
You see, like there was a time, I remember when I was a probation officer back in the day, and one of my jobs was to look after people who had served a life sentence, and they'd be released under licence to a probation officer, like myself or whatever, and then you'd see them on a regular basis. That's what they meant by a life. You see them for the rest of their lives, basically. And I remember when these men, invariably, who did a life sentence were released. Obviously, they'd been in prison for a long time. And I would go around my friends and ask them for pots, pans, especially if there was wedding presents, because these people came out and we would try and get them a bedsit or whatever. And they'd nothing. They'd absolutely nothing. But now you'd be told, oh, I'd be afraid to give it in case the pot might blow up or the electric kettle might electrocute somebody. So the world has changed. Do people, who take second-hand books? I know Vince and Paul do, don't they?
I'm sure they do, but also Nace Hospital accepts books. Obviously, they have a free library for long-term patients.
And there are, I see even people leave, which is great, people leave books at bus stops or on buses or whatever for others to pick up and pass it on. It's a great feeling to think that a book is going. Are you in a man's shed, Des? Or you just feel like...
I'm not.
You're, it feels like you're living in one.
Yes, my man's shed is here. I've enough work to do at home.
Okay. Des Bourne, thanks a million. You've asked a lot of questions. Hopefully we'll get many answers. joe@rte.ie. Pushes for Ukraine. John Gilroy, former Labour senator, you know, of him. John, you are involved in Crutches for Ukraine. Tell us.
Yeah, Joe. When the war in Ukraine started, a group of friends here in Glanmire got together and we decided that we'd like to do something. And I had previously injured my leg, I suppose, like everyone in the country, and I had some crutches under my stairs. And I suppose we thought that everybody in Ireland probably has crutches under their stairs. So we had a call here, just locally here in Glanmire and East Cork, you know, just to see what kind of response we'd get. And over the course of 6 weeks, we collected over 1,000 pairs of crutches.
Wow.
About 200 wheelchairs,
well
700
done.
And... 700, you know, walking frames, all sorts of mobility devices.
And are you still available to accept?
Yeah, We are, and what we do, we're kind of a loose group, really. And what we do, Joe, is we, if we ask people in different their own areas to do their own collection of stuff.
Yeah, great.
Liaise with me. You can give up my number anywhere that needs
we'll
to
put
be
it, We'll put it up on our website, the contact details, yeah.
Yeah, and if people did local collections in their own areas, we'll collect them, bring them to Cork, and we're working very closely with the Ukrainian community here in Cork, who send regular supplies of humanitarian aid to Ukraine. Okay. So we piggyback with them. About a year after the war started, we decided that it'd be important to see that the stuff that we're collecting is going where we're saying it's going to go.
Yeah. Okay.
So I went out to Ukraine.
Good man. Brilliant. At that time. Brilliant.
And we made a lot of contacts in a town called Borodyanka, which is close to Kyiv, which had been occupied by the Russians. So look, we know exactly what we're doing. We can guarantee that the stuff is going where we're saying it's going.
Insofar as we know, in just awful times we live in terms of world conflict. Gaza and Ukraine and Somalia and Sudan and it goes on Congo as well. John, have we any idea how many amputees there would be Ukraine, for example?
Yeah, well, I mean, the figures aren't official, but about 18 months ago, we got some figures that were saying there's over 40,000 young men who've lost limbs because of the war. So that's it's devastating. It's catastrophic, in fact.
It is catastrophic. Okay, so you're asking people, one, would you take it, and there's loads of ways of communicating now in the world we live in, between WhatsApp groups and Facebook and Insta and all that carry on. Somebody say, listen, is anyone, any of our gang, anyone interested in getting together, whatever crutches we can find, whatever walking sticks, wheelchairs, because there's a group in Cork and it's led by John Kilroy. Who will, if we can organise to get to, and people have great contacts now in terms of transport around the country, which, as you say, you need someone to start it in their community or golf club or GA club or whatever, and you'll take it from there.
And the only thing we do ask, though, is that whatever is collected is in good shape, good stuff. Yeah,
okay.
And that's the only condition we put on it. Yeah.
Okay, John. Very great service, John. Congratulations. But as you say, I know you'll bounce back and talk about, rightly so, what's happening in Ukraine, and the horror that's going on there in other parts of the world. Good amino market. That's John Gilroy. We'll tweet details of how people can get contact at Joe Liveline or RT Liveline. Today I'm Say and Sound, Ciarán Dunne. BCO was Mary Elizabeth Bruton. Research by Richard Byrne. Today's show is produced by Tara Lockery Grant, and Ray Darcy is next.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, people are interested in that app that David Carr was on about. It's called Pi. It's called Pi Squared, Squared, and it's absolutely free and it's great fun. And we are glad to be a part of any effort to increase the frequency of it, because it's a brilliant idea. And as you heard, he was a tonic and his whole family sound absolutely wonderful. A family of drafts champions, believe it or not, going back three generations. And back to seats and planes, Bridget Quirk. Bridget, good afternoon.
It's Bridget, Joe. How are you?
Good. And your experience is, are the planes getting smaller or are the seats getting smaller?
The seats are getting smaller. I come from a village in the West Waterford, Ballydough Upper.
Okay.
The home of the West Waterford Drama Festival.
Brilliant.
You've been there.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
And Cork was my local airport. So I've lived in London for 35 years and in Hertfordshire. Now I live in Blackpool, North West England.
Okay.
And for years I've been travelling over and back. And when I had to fly for Heathrow, the planes were bigger. Years ago, the planes were that bit big. The seats were more comfortable in the planes years ago than what they are now.
Yeah.
And now I have to fly out of Manchester or Liverpool. And in the modern planes that airline use, the seats are terrible. They're small. As well as being closer together, they're narrower. So if you're anywhere on the large side, it is very uncomfortable. And if you're seating in the emergency exit, which I prefer not to sit in anyway, if you have to ask for the seatbelt extension, they just won't allow you to sit there.
Oh, why?
Because Well, okay. I don't know. There's a policy with this particular airline.
Yeah, but some people find the seat belt extension much more comfortable and they leave it on for the duration. But you're saying if you ask for a seat belt extension, they say you cannot sit beside the emergency exit.
No, you can't. Last year, now my partner decided we were flying out to Liverpool and he picked the emergency exits. And then I thought, oh, I can't look out of the plane window there. I asked to swap. And for the extra leg room, which I didn't realise at the time. But on the flight when I was coming back on my own, I was flying into Manchester, and I thought, yes, it's the older style plane, I'll sit at the emergency seat. And she said, and when I asked for the seatbelt extension, she said, oh, no, well, I'll have to move you back one. But I prefer not to sit in those seats personally, because you don't get a good view out the window there anyway.
Yeah,
but if you need a seat, if you're anywhere on the large side, you're not allowed. It's under terms and conditions. If I looked it up after, you're not allowed if you're on the large side.
And
the elderly lady was allowed to sit there. Do you know, in case you need to open the door in an emergency.
Yeah.
And the young man that may be on the large side would be better able to open the door than the elderly lady that was allowed to sit there. No disrespect to her. She might have had
arthritis. I know what you mean, yeah.
Because she was small. She was so I don't know what it is. If you need a seatbelt extension, they won't allow you to sit there.
And I saw an email this morning saying they were on a plane and they were sitting at the emergency exit and the air staff came to him on the plane and said, what age are you? And he said, I'm 70, and very fit man. And they said to him, oh, you're too old to sit beside the emergency exit. You have to be able to help other people get out, which you'd be able to do when you're 70. And I didn't know that was... by the way, it wasn't Ryanair or Aer Lingus we're talking about.
And it's probably the same reason.
And would you
feel that the last person can't sit there either.
And would you go on a long-haul flight now, Bridget?
No, even with this airline, when they're advertising flights to Europe, because I'm lucky enough to be living by the sea now. No, thank you, I'd rather stay at home now. I fly back to Ireland because I'd like to go home and visit family and friends and that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I wouldn't go on a long-haul flight in these new modern aircraft. They'd be too uncomfortable.
And you say to me you're from Ballyduff.
Ballyduff, Upper County Waterford. And I want to wish the Ballyduff Drama Group the best of luck next week in the Drama Festival in Athlone.
And the Drama Festival in Athlone, which is absolutely fantastic, is sponsored by and has been by RTE. And
Ballyduff Drama, their play is called The Blackwater Lightship.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're on Monday the 12th
Colm Tobin,
of May.
Is that Colm Tobin or John Bamble, The Blackwater Lightship?
I
heard the ads for it the other day, and I'm just so glad because amateur drama is such an important part of life, especially outside of the capital. And RTE have been associated,
fantastic.
And I know Tom McGuire, who was head of radio, was a great champion of it. Peter Woods, who's just retired here, is there a great job as head of radio as well. Peter, they were both of them into Amdram, so I'm glad to see that. Patricia, our new boss in radio, is keeping up the connection because it's so important.
Yeah. Can I tell you a bit about you've been in that hall. It is the best village hall in the country. Now, I've been into a couple of theatres here in England, and they're not as good as that hall in Bel. And you've been in it about 30 years ago. I happened on a show that you were doing for Gay Bottom last Christmas, a Christmas show, in the 1990s.
Yeah,
you were there for Christmas one year.
The 1890s.
And I found it on MP3. 1990s. I found it on an MP3 recording of it.
Oh my God.
And I was listening to this, and I still have it.
Okay.
And it was from the 1990s.
Well, I'm here just short of 40 years, so you're right. It was going back that far. And you know what I remember that day, Bridget? Because it was coming up to Christmas, and Santi arrived on a horse and cart. Okay? And it was very icy. And when Santi was coming in the gate, didn't the horse slip? Now,
everyone,
do you remember it? Do you remember? And but Santi was fine, and above all, the horse was fine, and everyone was fine. But we got a terrible fright. But anyway, But you're right. Support everyone in the RTE Amdram in Athlone, which is on next week. Bridget, good to meet you, Margaret. Bridget Joe at RTE.ie.